Chapter 1 Drummer. The habitation ring of the transfer station at LaGrange 5 was three times the diameter of the one Drummer had lived in on Tycho, half a lifetime ago. TSL 5 had the small city's worth of offices with the same fake marble walls and soft, full-spectrum lighting as the one they'd given her, the same crash-couch beds and water showers as her quarters there. The air had a constant smell of terpene compounds, as if the station were the largest chrysanthemum in the universe. The dome in the center of the station had berths for hundreds of ships, and warehouses that seemed so numerous and deep that filling them would leave Earth as empty as a squeezed-out bulb. All those berths and warehouses were at rest now. But starting tomorrow, that would change. TSL 5 was about to be open for business. And even as tired as she was, as annoyed as she felt at having to haul herself halfway across the system for what was ultimately a ribbon-cutting ceremony, there was also an excitement to it. After 3 decades of struggle, Mother Earth was open for business. The planet glowed on her wall screen. Whirls of high white clouds and glimpses of the still greenish sea beneath it. The Terminator crept across, pulling a blanket of darkness and city lights behind it. The ships of the Earth-Mars Coalition Navy floated around it, dots of darkness swimming on the high sea of air. Drummer had never gone down that well, and now, by the terms of the treaty she'd signed on the Union's behalf, she never would. Fine with her. Her knees bothered her sometimes, as it was. But as an objet d'art, Terra was hard to beat. Humanity had done its level best to kick the shit out of the slowly spinning egg. Overpopulation, exploitation, atmospheric and oceanic imbalance, and then 3 military-level meteor strikes, any one of which would have fucked up the dinosaurs. And here it still was, like a soldier, scarred, broken, reimagined, rebuilt, and remade. Time was supposed to heal all wounds. To Drummer, that was just a nice way of saying that if she waited long enough, none of the things that seemed important to her would turn out to matter. Or at least, not the way she'd thought they did. Time, plus the combined expertise of a Martian terraforming project staggering under the loss of its mandate, the ruthless administration of Earth's political sector, and the huge market of 1,300-odd worlds, all in need of biological substrates to grow food that people could actually eat, had hauled Earth, slow and staggering, up to functional again. Her system chirped, a polite little pop like someone snapping bamboo. Her private secretary's voice followed like a drink of whiskey.
"Madam President?"
"Give me a minute, Vaughn," she said.
"Yes, ma'am.
But Secretary General Lee would like to speak with you before the ceremony." "The Earth-Mars Coalition can wait until after cocktails. I'm not opening this station by jumping every time the EMC clears their throat. Bad precedent."
"Copy that. I'll handle it."
The system made the little woody talk that meant she had her privacy again. She leaned back in her chair, looked over at the images set into the wall behind her desk. All the previous Transport Union presidents before her, Michio Pa, then Tion, Walker, Sandrani, and her own thin, stern face looking back at her from the end. She hated that picture. It made her look like she'd just eaten something sour. The first version of it looked like something off a singles forum. At least, this one was dignified. For most of the Transport Union's members, this image was all they'd ever seen of her. 1,300 worlds,
and within a decade, most, if not all of them, would have their own versions of the TSL-5. Handoff stations that marked the bubble of void where the planet's sphere of control ended and the unions began. Anything that the colonies needed from humanity's first home or from each other went up the gravity wells. That was the inner's problem. Moving it from one system to another belonged to the belt. Old terms, inners, belters, they stuck because language held on to things that way, even when the reality around them had shifted. The Earth-Mars coalition had been the center of humanity once, the innermost of the inners. Now it was an important spoke on the wheel whose hub was Medina Station, where the weird alien sphere sat in the middle of the knot space that linked all the ring gates. Where her civilian quarters were when she wasn't on the void cities. Where Saba was when he wasn't on his ship or with her. Medina Station was home. Except that even for her, the blue-black disk of Earth on her screen was home too. Maybe that wouldn't always be true. There were kids old enough to vote now who'd never known what it meant to have only one son. She didn't know what Earth or Mars or Sol would be to them. Maybe this atavistic melancholy just behind her breastbone would die with her generation. Or maybe she was tired and cranky and needed a nap. The bamboo broke again. Ma'am? I'm on my way. Yes, ma'am. But we have a priority message from traffic control in Medina. Drummer leaned forward, her hands flat against the cool of the desk. Shit. Shit, shit, shit. Did we lose another one? No, ma'am. No lost ships. She felt the dread loosen its grip a little. Not all the way. What then? They're reporting an unscheduled transit. A freighter, but it didn't have a transponder. Seriously? She said. Did they think we wouldn't notice it?
Couldn't speak to that,
Vaughn said. She pulled up the administrative feed from Medina. She could get anything from her realm here, traffic control, environmental data, energy output, sensor arrays in any slice of the electromagnetic spectrum. But light delay made all of it a little more than 4 hours old. Any order she gave would come through 8, 8.5 hours after the request for it was made. The vast alien intelligence that had engineered the ring gates and the massive ruins in the system beyond them had found ways to manipulate distance. But the speed of light was the speed of light, and seemed like it always would be. She scrolled through the logs, found the relevant slot, played it.
Medina here. Confermi. Traffic control's usual calm.
The responding voice had a little interference, an artifact of the gates.
This is the freighter Savage Landing out of Castilla on approach, Medina. Transferring our status now.
A new window popped up. The ship status of a light freighter. Martian design. Old but not antiquated. It took a few seconds for traffic to come back.
Visez bien, Savage Landing. You are clear to transit. Control code is...
Fuck! Abort, Savage Landing! Do not transit!
A sudden spike on the safety curve and the alarm status blinked to red. A new drive signature appeared on Medina's control board, the plume sweeping through the starless dark of the slow zone. It was done. All of it over with hours ago. But Drummer still felt her heartbeat pick up. Traffic was shouting for the new ship to identify itself. The railgun emplacements clicked to active. If they'd fired, everyone on the unauthorized ship was dead already. The safety curve decayed.
The disruption created by mass and energy passing through the ring, dropping until it passed the threshold. The intruding ship spun, burning hard, and zipped through a different gate, kicking the curve back up again as it escaped. Traffic cursed in several languages, sending standby messages to three other inbound ships. The Savage Landing was quiet, but the feed from their system showed a bruisingly hard burn as they peeled away, breaking off the approach to the Castilla Gate. She rolled back, the near calamity reversing itself. The reckless asshole had come in from Freehold and passed out into Oberon, because of course it had. The leaking radiation from the Oberon gate showed that the ship had made it. As close as it had cut the safety curve, it hadn't gone Dutchman. But if the Savage Landing had gone through as scheduled, one or both ships could have vanished into wherever ships went when their transits failed. In the short term, it would mean slotting Savage Landing in later. There'd be a bunch of pushbacks. Maybe dozens of ships that had to change their burns and coordinate new transits. Not a threat, but a pain in the ass. And not a good precedent. "Should I respond?" Vaughn asked. "Or would you rather deal with this personally, ma'am?" It was an excellent question. Policy was a ratchet. If she pulled the trigger, gave the order that the next unauthorized ship through was going to be turned into scrap metal and regrets, it wasn't something she could pull back from. Someone much better at this than she was had taught her to be very careful doing something if she wasn't ready to do it every time from then on. But Christ, it was tempting. "Have Medina log the transit, add the full cost to Freehold and Oberon's tabs and penalties for the delays they caused," she said. "Yes, ma'am," Vaughn said. "Anything else?" "Yes," she thought. "But I don't know what yet." The conference room had been designed for this moment. The vaulted ceiling looked as grand as a cathedral. Secretary General Lee of Earth stood at his podium, shifting his grave but satisfied countenance out at the cameras of dozens of different, carefully selected news feeds. Drummer tried to do the same. "President Drummer," one of the reporters called, lifting a hand for attention the same way people probably had in the forums of Rome. Her podium told her the man's name was Carlisle Hayam, with Moonhua Ilbo's series office. A dozen others had started clamoring for her attention, too. "Hayam," she said, smiling, and the others quieted down. The truth was, she sort of liked this part. It appealed to some long-forgotten ambition to perform on a stage, and it was one of the few places where she felt like she was actually in control. Most of her work felt like she was trying to stuff air back into a leaking balloon. "How do you respond to Martin Karchek's concerns about the transfer station?" "I'd have to listen to them," she said. "I've only got so many hours in my day." The reporters chuckled, and she heard the glee. Yes, they were opening the first handoff station. Yes, Earth was about to stagger up out of years of environmental crisis to ramp up its active trade with the colonies. All anyone really wanted was a couple politicians being snippy at each other. And that was fine. As long as they kept looking at the little stuff, she could work on the big things. Secretary General Lee, a broad-faced man with a lush mustache and a workman's calloused hands, cleared his throat. "If you don't mind," he said, "there are always people who are wary of change. And that's a good thing. Change should be watched, moderated, and questioned. But that conservative view shouldn't rein in progress or put a damper on hope. Earth is humanity's first and truest home, the soil from which all of us, whatever system we now inhabit, first grew. Earth will always, always be central to the greater project of humanity in the universe. Whistling past the graveyard. Earth was celebrating a huge milestone in its history, and that was maybe the third most important thing on her agenda. But how do you tell a planet that history has passed it by? Better to nod and smile, enjoy the moment and the champagne. Once this was over, she'd have to get back to work. They moved through the expected questions. Would the renegotiation of the tariff agreements be overseen by Drummer or former President Sandrani? Would the transport union remain neutral in the contested elections on Nova Catalunya? Would the Ganymede status talks be held on Luna or Medina? There was even one question about the dead systems, Charon, Adro, and Narica, where ring gates led to things much stranger than Goldilocks zone planetary systems. Secretary General Lee fended that one off, which was just as well. Dead systems gave Drummer the creeps. After the Q&A was done, Drummer did a dozen photo ops with the Secretary General, high-level administrators from the EMC, and celebrities from the planets. A dark-skinned woman in a bright blue sari, a pale man in a formal suit, a pair of comically identical men in matching gold dinner jackets. There was a part of her that enjoyed this, too. She suspected that the pleasure she took in Earthers clamoring to get mementos of themselves with the head of the Belters spoke poorly of her in some vague, spiritual way. She'd grown up in a universe where people like her were disposable, and she'd lived long enough for fortune's wheel to lift her up higher than the Earth's sky. Everyone wanted the belt for a friend, now that the term meant more than a cloud of half-mined-out chunks of debris trapped between Mars and Jupiter. For children born today, the belt was the thing that tied all humanity together. Semantic drift and political change. If the worst that came out of it was a little schadenfreude on her part, she could live with that. Vaughn waited in a small antechamber. His face was a network of crags that would have done credit to a mountain range, but he managed to make it work for him. His formal jacket was cut to echo old-style vac suits, the marks of their oppression remade as high fashion. Time healed all wounds, but it didn't erase the scars so much as decorate them.
"You have an hour before the reception, ma'am," he said as Drummer sat on the couch and rubbed her feet.
"Understood.
Can I get you anything?"
"Encrypted tight beam and privacy."
"Yes, ma'am," he said without missing a beat.
When the door slid closed behind him, she turned on the system camera and composed herself. The plan that had been forming in the back of her head all through the ceremonies was in place. All the bits and pieces she'd need to make it happen. And sooner was better than later. Punishment worked best when there wasn't a gap between misbehavior and consequences. Or at least, that was what they told her. But there was also a real advantage in giving the offender time to savor their regret. Best of all was when she could do both. She hit record.
"Captain Holden," she said, "I'm linking you through to the data on the unauthorized transit from Freehold to Oberon that occurred today. I'm also giving you access to the security review of the Freehold system. It's not much. One habitable planet, a little smaller than Mars. Another one that's exploitable as long as you don't mind too much nitrogen and cyanide in your air. The governor of Freehold is named..." She checked the records and coughed with contempt and laughter. "Payne Houston. I'm assuming that's his own choice and not what his mommy called him. Either way, I'm sending you under an executive mandate so that you can get going right now. I'll get Emily Santos Baca and the security committee to genuflect over this well before you get there, so we'll be fine with that. Your official mission is to carry the message that Freehold's repeated violations of Transportation Union guidelines have triggered punitive action, and that I'm banning all traffic in and out of Freehold for 3 years. When he asks whether it's Earth years, the answer is yes. He's going to make a point of that, because that's the kind of idiot he is. Your unofficial mission is not to hurry. I want Freehold and all the systems like it to see a gunship moseying toward them for weeks without knowing what it's going to do when it gets there. I'll have my staff draw up the usual work agreement. If you can't take the job, let me know as soon as possible. Otherwise, I'll have you on the roster to fuel up and make transit in the next 15 hours. She reviewed the message, then sent it out with a copy to Ahmed McCahill, the chair of the security committee. Then it was an executive request to push the Rocinante to the head of the resupply and transit authorization queues. And then Vaughn was knocking discreetly at her door. He took her grunt as permission to come in, which it was. Secretary General Lee is asking whether you're indisposed, ma'am, he said. He's getting concerned. She checked the time. Her hour's respite had ended 20 minutes ago. Tell him I'm on my way, she said. And do I have a change of clothes? In the closet, ma'am, Vaughn said as he slipped out the door again, quiet as a phantom. Drummer changed quickly, shedding the formal jacket and slacks for a bamboo silk blouse and self-tailoring skirt with a neural net woven into it that was about as intelligent as an insect, just to keep the drape right. She considered herself in the mirror with a certain satisfaction. She only wished Saba were here to accompany her, but he'd probably make too many consort of the queen jokes. She shut down the mirror, its screen defaulting back to the image of Earth. The planet was over half in darkness now, a crescent of white and blue. Belters had tried to kill the Earth, but here it was, still spinning. They'd tried to burn the inner planet's ships, and here was the EMC Navy, scraped back together and flying. And on the other hand, Earth had tried to choke the Belters under its boot for generations, and here was Drummer. Time had made them allies in the great expansion of civilization out to the stars. At least, until something else changed.